अदौ कुर्वन्गीतामृतं ददौ लोकत्रयोपकाराय तस्मै कृष्णात्मने नमः। हरे कृष्णा, वेलकम बैक टू अ भगवद्गीता भक्तिशास्त्री कोर्स। नाउ वी आर इन द भक्ति सेक्शन ऑफ द भगवद्गीता चैप्टर 7 to 12। भगवद्गीता कैन बी डिवाइडेड इनटू 3 सेक्शंस, कर्म, भक्ति एंड ज्ञान। सो एक्चुअली द फुल भगवद्गीता टॉक्स अबाउट भक्ति, बट द फर्स्ट 6 चैप्टर्स टॉक अबाउट हाउ from karma one can gradually rise to the level of bhakti, and the last 6 chapters talk about how from jnana one can rise to the level of bhakti. The middle 6 chapters focus on bhakti entirely. So now the 7th chapter is knowledge of the absolute. We discuss 7.1, which talks about how one can by hearing eventually come to the level of mai asakta manaha. So the first section from verses 1 to 12 talks about knowing Krishna fully as the source of the material and the spiritual energies, a source of everything ultimately. So, knowing Krishna's glory, and in that, the first section, verses 1 to 3, talk about the glory of knowing about Krishna, the glory of knowledge of Krishna. So, let's look at this once again. So, this is the subsections we are going through. So, know Krishna in full, that is the first section, verses 1 to 12. Isn't that the subsection that we are going through is glory of knowledge about Krishna, that is 1 to 3. And then we will have 4 to 7 talking about how Krishna is the source of everything material and spiritual. So, let's look at the verses. Jnanam deham savijnanam idam vakshamya sheshataha yajnatvaneh bhuyonyaj jnatavyam avashishyate. So, jnanam teham savijnanam. So, knowledge and realization, both together, savijnanam. So, jnana and vijnana are referred to in various places in the Bhagavad Gita, this combination together. In the 6th chapter, we saw jnana vijnana coming together once. Jnana vijnana truptatman, that was 6.8. And before that, jnana and vijnana, this combination has been together. Once again, in the section where Krishna talks about how lust is the destroyer of knowledge and realization. So, that is in 3.41. Asmatam indriyanyadav niyamya bharatarshabha papamanam prajahiya enam jnana vijnana nashanam. So, jnana and vijnana, this combination comes repeatedly. And this will come once again in the 9th chapter also. In 9.1, idam tu te guhyatamam pravakshamya nasuyave jnana vijnana sahitam yajnatva mokshase ashubhat. So, jnana vijnana sahitam. So, Krishna will talk about this in multiple places. And not everywhere the meanings are the same. Although there is similarity in the sense of the usage. So, generally jnana refers to theoretical, and vijnan refers to realizational or transformational knowledge. Here, Prabhupada uses in a slightly different sense. Here, Prabhupada says jnana refers to phenomenal knowledge, and vijnana refers to numinous knowledge. Now, what is phenomena and nomena? These are actually very philosophical terms. To understand these terms, we have to recognize that philosophy in itself is the search for a deeper reality that is beyond the normal. What is normal perceptual? What is we perceive it. So, phenomena refers to things as they appear to us, and nomena refers to things as they actually are, independent of our sense perception. Now, what is the difference between the two? See, one of the fundamental insights while studying spiritual knowledge is that actually, not just spiritual knowledge, studying any knowledge, studying the world through any methodology in a serious way. One of the points which comes up is that things are deeper than what they appear to be. Reality is not as it appears to our eyes. So, even in Western history, in the Western intellectual history, as well, of course, in Vedic history, the idea has always been that the way things appear and the way I think they actually are, there is a difference. So, now the question comes up, we access the world through our senses. So, if we put aside our sense perception, then how can we know things as they actually are? So, this is a debate even between Western philosophy. In Western philosophy, there is empiricism and rationalism. So, empiricism refers to direct perception. Empirical knowledge, we say. That is, knowledge is acquired through direct sense perception. And rationalism refers to that which is acquired through reasoning. So, empiricism and rationalism, these are the two branches of Western intellectual thought which have come out. And among the two, both have also had conflicts. Now, in one sense, empiricism is pratyaksha and rationalism is anumana. So, now science originally started with empirical to rational. Then, when empirical Newton observed a fruit, now most people who observe the fruit, what would they do? They just pick up the fruit, eat and forget about the whole thing. Good, the fruit fell down when I was there. But a thinker like Newton thought, okay, why did this fruit fall down? And then after that, one moves to rational. And one tries to, rationality means we try to come up with a logical framework of conceptual understanding which helps us make sense of the world around us. So, jnanam pe hamsa vijnanam. So, actually, jnana means things as they are, and vijnana, the way Prabhupada talks about noumena, as things they actually are. Now, that would roughly correlate with the Western idea, rationalistic idea, that actually, beyond how things appear, there is a framework which we need to understand. So, the different acharyas give different meanings of jnana and vijnana. Some, Vishnachika Thakur, for example, acharyas like him, they say that jnana refers to the aishwarya and vijnana refers to the madhurya, the greatness of God and the sweetness of God. So, the different acharyas can give different explanations of this, like this. But the important point is not that what the specific terms refer to. The important point is that Krishna is telling that there are these two aspects to this knowledge, and both I will give you. Idam vakshami asheshataha. Ashesheta, that means I will hold nothing back from you. Yat gyatva neha bhuya unyaj. Having acquired this knowledge, gyatavyam avashishyate, nothing will remain to be known. This is quite a bold claim. And having acquired this knowledge, there is nothing more for you to know. How could anyone make such a claim? There's nothing more for anyone to know. Actually, that claim is based on the understanding that ultimately everything is spiritual reality. And when it comes from Krishna, it is spiritual. When we know the essential principles, we know everything in the sense of knowing the principles. The details are endless and the details can never be known. We can contrast this statement in the Bhagavad Gita that there's nothing more to be known with Krishna himself telling in the 10th chapter that actually pradhanyata kuru sreshta anantya astyanto vistarasya me. In the 10th chapter, when describing his vibhutis, Krishna will say that I will only tell you a sample of my glories, my opulences, because my glories are endless. And Krishna, Arjuna will also say that I cannot know your full glory. So even actually what to speak of me, even the devatas or the asura, nobody can nahite bhagavan vyaktim vidur devan adanyamah. Nobody can know you. So when both Krishna and Arjuna have said that Krishna's glories are unknown, are entirely unknown, are not completely knowable by anyone, then what does Krishna mean when he says that you will know everything? You will know everything. There is nothing left. This is talking about principles, not about details. So generally the Upanishads talk about Tattvatraya. Tattvatraya is the three absolute truths. What are three absolute truths? Not three absolute truths, three fundamental truths of reality. There is Jiva, Jagat and Jagdish. Tattvatraya it is called. So jeev is so it's consciousness, material nature, and the ultimate causative principle. And so jeev, jagat, and jagdish. Jeev is consciousness, jagat is material nature, nature or matter, as might be the word used in modern philosophical parlance. And then there is jagdish, there is the absolute truth. So that may be called as the ultimate causative principle, or some other similar word which may be non-specific about what the nature of that absolute truth is. So Krishna is telling over here, as far as those principles are concerned, you will understand those principles completely. And then there will be nothing more for you to know in terms of principles. Although, of course, in terms of details, the amount of knowledge that one can get is ultimately endless. So, jnatavyam avashishyate. There's nothing more to be known. So, now let's move forward. When Krishna talks one more point about this, jnatavyam avashishyate, there's nothing more, then we also say that the Bhagavad Gita is like the graduate level of knowledge, and the Bhagavatam is the postgraduate, and the Chaitanya Charitamrita is the doctoral level of knowledge. So again, the question comes up, what does it mean? If Krishna is telling over here that there is nothing more to be known, then how can we say that Bhagavatam is a higher knowledge and Chaitanya Charitamrita is still higher knowledge? Actually, there is a progression. To understand the progression, let's look at the let's look at a few things here. So Gita talks about the progression within the Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam Chaitanya Charitamrita is that. The Gita talks about God's identity. The Bhagavatam talks about God's activity. And Chaitanya Charitamrita talks about God's mentality. That means the Bhagavad Gita helps us understand who is God. So who is God? Is the absolute truth a person or impersonal? Is the absolute truth a person? Who is that person? So Gita helps us understand who is God. Then, now in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna's pastimes are talked about briefly. Janma Karma Cha Medhivin, the glory of those pastimes are talked about. But his specific pastimes are not explained in detail. So his activities are described in the Bhagavatam. God's activity comes in the Bhagavatam. And beyond that is God's heart, God's mind. Now, what does God think? What does God desire? What is God like? What is it not like? That is described vividly in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Krishna feels that he is bereaved, that the devotees have missed out, that the devotees are, that his gopis are relishing a greater nectar than what he is getting. And therefore he feels that I have to taste the love of the gopis, especially of Radharani. And therefore Krishna, taking on the mood of Radharani, comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this sort of esoteric insights about the heart of the Lord are described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So when we say that there is nothing more to be known, that essentially it again talks in terms of principles. But the details about Krishna are infinite. In terms of principles, you know, the person, the truth that the absolute truth is a person, the truth that absolute truth can be attained by bhakti, the truth that actually the absolute truth is bhaktavatsal. So there are fundamental principle truths that are outlined in the Bhagavad Gita. But as far as the details are concerned, the details are endless. And it's not the details are unimportant. Details also illumine Krishna's glories. And they make remembrance of Krishna more relishable. But the details come later. What comes initially is the incremental principles. That means the fundamental principle that increment our understanding about Krishna gradually. So, jnatva neha bhuyo anyaj gyatavyam avashishyate. There is nothing more to be known. Now, the acharyas describe, if we consider jnana and vijnana to be aishwarya and madhurya, then chapter 7 and 8 give us aishwarya jnana. And chapter 9 gives us Madhurya Gyan, Madhurya Gyan. And both together, chapters 10 to 12, give us that. So, Gyan Vigyan Sahitam. Both of them together are present in chapters 10 and 12. So, we'll see how this happens. how Krishna's sweetness. Now, Madhurya Gyan doesn't necessarily hear, you understand, the words again can mean differently. Madhurya Gyan is not necessarily the same as Madhurya Rasa Gyan. Madhurya Rasa is a specific conjugal rasa. There are five rasas, and among them, Madhurya is one of the rasas. So, Madhurya Gyan is not the same as Madhurya Rasa Gyan. Madhurya Rasa Gyan specifically refers to the knowledge of Krishna's conjugal pastimes. Madhurya Gyan in general refers to Krishna's sweetness as contrasted with his greatness. So, as for Madhurya Gyan, even Krishna being tied up by Mother Yashoda, that is also Madhurya Gyan. So, Krishna giving up his greatness so that he fights with the Gopas and is defeated by them, that is also Madhurya Gyan. It is not Madhurya Rasa, but it is Madhurya Gyan. So, the Bhagavad Gita may not talk directly much about Madhurya Rasa. But in the ninth chapter, his Bhakta Vatsalya, his hunger for love, and how devotion is his appetizer, all these things are talked about, and how he always protects his devotees. So, in that sense, Madhurya Gyan is given. And in 10th, 11th, 12th, both come up. The Aishwarya as well as the Madhurya aspect come up. Now, so, how is the Gita complete? We discussed it. Complete principles are given. Complete details can never be given, even about any specific subject, what to speak of, the absolute truth. So, Tattvatra is Jagat, Jeev and Jagadish, Matter, Spirit and Controller. These three, MSC, Matter, Spirit and Controller, these three are the Tattvatra. And the basic outline about what they are and how they interact, that is talked about in this chapter. So, in that sense, the chapter gives complete knowledge to us. Now, Prabhupada explains this right at the start of his purport. Complete knowledge includes knowledge of the phenomenal world, the spirit behind it, and source of both of them. This is transcendental knowledge. This is transcendental knowledge. What this means is, now it's interesting, we would think that transcendental knowledge would mean knowledge about the transcendental world. But if the knowledge is about the material world, about the phenomenal world, then how can that be called transcendental knowledge? So, transcendental knowledge doesn't necessarily mean only knowledge about the transcendental world. It also means knowledge that directs our consciousness towards transcendence. So, the knowledge that is there, if we can see this world in its connection with the transcendental absolute truth, then even that knowledge will be called as transcendental knowledge. Because that knowledge is directing us towards transcendence. So, or any knowledge which helps us remember Krishna and helps us direct our consciousness towards Krishna, helps us to reveals to us the connection of everything with Krishna, helps us to see things in a transcendental light. And in that sense, it is transcendental knowledge. And Prabhupada also explains in what sense we know everything. It is not that we have to know all the details. Prabhupada quotes with Mudha Mundaka Upanishad, where it said in 1.3, Kasmin bhagavo vijnate sarvamidam vijnatam bhavati. That means once one knows that absolute truth, then everything else becomes known. So this is 7.2. We know the absolute truth completely. So now, 7.3. Manushyanam sahasreshu kashchid yatati siddhaye yatatam api siddhanam kashchin mam vaiti tatvataham. So, manushyanam sahasreshu. Sahasra is 100. Chata is 100. Sahasra is 1000. So, sometimes we say sahasra shat praman, 100 pranam. We say hundreds and thousands of obeisances at your lotus feet. Now, actually, we may say sahasra shat koti dandavat pranam. But we often, when they meet a person, we may be lazy to offer even one pranam. So, it's no need to have exaggeration like that to try to express our respects. Even please accept my humble obeisances, dandavat pranam, that is good enough. There is no need for sahasra shata koti dandavat pranam at your holy lotus feet. Sometimes we use words in such a way that if we have that kind of reverence, that's different. But sometimes the import of words gets lost when we use it without a without the appropriate feeling behind those words. So here Krishna is saying that sahasreshu, that among thousands of people, Nushyam sahasreshu kashchid yatati siddhaye. Very few endeavor for perfection. Siddhaye, yatati siddhaye, siddhi is perfection. Yatati is endeavor. Very few endeavor for perfection. And in yatatam api siddhanam, among those who endeavor for perfection, kashchin am vati tatvata. Very few actually know me in truth. So in that sense, what Krishna is telling over here is that he is down highlighting the rarity of knowledge about him. Why is this knowledge rare? Because, first of all, most people are caught up in the animal propensities of eating, sleeping, mating and defending. So there are materialistic people who are caught up in that. And unfortunately, there are religious people also who get caught up in these things. How is that? Most religious people, they practice religion as a means for dharma, the dharma artha kama, karma kanda level. A specific category of dharma artha kama may not be there in the Abrahamic religions. These names might not be there, but the conception is the same. That actually God's blessings upon us are there when we get the good things of life. And what are the good things of life? Often people think largely in materialistic terms. I get this, I get that, I get all these material things, then I'm happy. So, manushyanam sahasreshu, sahasreshu. That among thousands of people, most people are caught up in eating, sleeping, mating, defending. So, even people who are religious, they use their religion for pursuing eating, sleeping, mating, defending. And there's a popular chant to Hanumanji. Tum toho bal brahmachari, mujhe de do ek nari. So, the chant is that, you are a celibate, but please give me a woman. So, this is completely at a karmakanda level. So, of course, choosing a appropriate spouse, a compatible spouse, is essential for a good life, even in for a spiritual seeker also. If it is incompatible, that is, then that can be a problem. And in that sense, for a devotee to pray for an appropriate spouse, for a compatible spouse, materially and spiritually compatible spouse, is not at all wrong. But the point is that most people's desires get stuck at that level itself. So, in Sanskrit, there is the word dharma patni. So, now it is for people, the purpose is the patni is for dharma. You know, one has a spouse so that one can follow dharma. But people think dharma is for the patni. That means that they practice the dharma so that they can get a spouse. So the purpose of dharma is like dharma is for artha and kama. No. Actually, ultimately dharma, artha, kama are all to be practiced so that one can get moksha, apavarga, one goes beyond material things. So, you know, there are people have this conception of soulmate. You know, there is the concept of reincarnation has also been included in movies and novels, and there they romanticize it. There is a couple who cannot unite in one life, and they reincarnate both, and then they unite in the next life, and this is how the romance is successful. That's how they depict that. And sometimes there are these people who claim to have mystic seers, and then you show them there, they say their hands, or see them tarots, and they say, oh, is this person your soulmate or not your soulmate? So actually this kind of romanticization of reincarnation is very trivial. Now our focus should not be on the, when we are studying reincarnation, the focus should not be on the mate part, the focus should be on the soul part. That means, it's not who is my mate, but what is my soul? That should be the question. So if I'm just continuing life after life, who am I actually? And what is my eternal relationship? So the essential point is that the ultimate soul mate of the soul is Krishna. No, it is Krishna who have a eternal relationship. Whether we may be in a male body or a female body, that doesn't matter. The eternal relationship of every soul is with Krishna. So of course, the word mate involves certain connotations which we cannot apply to Krishna. But the point is, in terms of a relationship, the eternal relationship of the soul is with Krishna. And for that, we should focus on the soul part, not the mate part. Now, most people they use dharma also for artha. So, siddhaye, here siddhaye refers to perfection in terms of liberation, in terms of attainment of transcendence. So, very few people endeavor for transcendence. And yet, tam api siddhanam. And even among those who endeavor for transcendence, kaschin mam veti tatvatah, few actually know me. This is interesting that even among those striving for liberation, they are themselves very few, but among them also, they can have different conceptions. They can think Brahman is the absolute truth. They can think that the Paramatma is the absolute truth. But to understand Bhagawan in as the absolute truth, in his glory, in his beauty and glory, in his complete majesty and his complete sweetness, that is extremely rare. So that is kaschin mam vet tatvatah. Very few people know me in truth. So by underscoring that how rare knowledge about him is, Krishna attracts Arjuna's attention. Just like many people like are attracted to breaking news. Why? Because they think I should get to hear the news before anybody else gets to hear. Then I will tell everyone the news. So people want the latest news. People don't want about taza khabar, latest news. People don't want old news. Because the idea is I want to know something which others don't know. So Krishna is telling, this is something which I'm telling you. Very, very few people know this. So by that he's attracting Arjuna. Please understand this. And then, now Prabhupada makes a very interesting argument that now the Mayavadi scholars say, the impersonalists say that actually bhakti is for less intelligent people. They try to make a simplistic division among the various paths that actually, karma is for the hard-working people. There are these different yogas, karma yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga, bhakti yoga. So they say, karma is for the hard-working people, karma yoga. Ashtanga yoga is for the people who like to do austerities. Bhakti yoga is for the sentimental people. And jnana yoga is for the intellectual people. Now, actually speaking, even people who are not intellectual, they like to think of themselves as intellectual. They like to think about themselves, oh, I am very great. I am a very great scholar. So because they like to think like that, so what happens is, karma yoga, people, okay, even if somebody does karma yoga, yeah, it's for hard-working people. Yes, I'm a hard-working person. People like that. Most people think that I should do jnana yoga because I'm an intellectual. And people start looking down at bhakti, oh, sentimental. Who wants to be sentimental? Although sentiments are the ornaments of our heart and our life, sentiments are what make life worth living. But bhakti is not just sentimentality. Bhakti is actually guided, enriched, purified sentiments. So Prabhupada says that, okay, they said bhakti is for easy, sentimental people, it's easy. Jnana, karma, sentiments, I say that anybody can have sentiments, but intellectual, that's difficult. Austerity, that's difficult. Hard work, that's difficult. So say that bhakti is for less intelligent people, it is easy path. But Prabhupada argues that if bhakti is for the easy, bhakti is easy path, then why would anyone choose a difficult path? It's easy path, follow it. Everybody should follow it. Why do you, if imagine there is one has to climb up a mountain and the goal is to reach that on the top of the mountain, and the one path which is very difficult, another path which is easy. So why would anyone want to choose a difficult path? Everybody would want to choose the easy path. But people choose the difficult path because actually Prabhupada says bhakti is not easy. When one thinks I can do whatever I want in the in the name of bhakti, that kind of bhakti might be easy. But when one actually follows bhakti according to scriptures, then that kind of bhakti is not easy. Shruti Spruti Purana Adi Pancharatri Ki Vidhim Vina Aikanti Ki Harer Bhakti Utpatayaiva Kalpate. So here is quoting from Bhakti Sama Sindhu. Shruti Smriti Purana Adi. Shruti Smriti Purana Adi means other things like this. Pancharatri Vidhim Vina. So, Pancharatra Vidhi means that, means basically these are different categories of scripture. Shruti is the Vedas, including Upanishads. Smriti is generic Vedic scriptures which are coming from tradition, and among them the examples are given Purana and Pancharatra. So, if without their Vidhi, one practices Bhakti, Aikantiki Harer Bhakti. If under the Aikantiki Bhakti, then what happens? Utpatayaiva. Utpat means simply disruption in society is created. So then Prabhupada also quotes that real knowledge about Krishna, why is it rare? Because it comes by revelation. It doesn't come merely by recollection or reconstruction. So what does it mean? Real knowledge about Krishna doesn't come merely by reconstruction or recollection or even by reflection. See, what does it mean? I just think and think and think and I understand Krishna. It doesn't work like that. Recollection means I think I'll remember. Oh, maybe I was in the spiritual world. Who was I at that time? Think and I get to know my Swarupa. Reconstruction means that people, our dreams are mostly reconstructed. That means we see something, we see a mountain and we see a goal somewhere and we reconstruct the two together and make it into a golden mountain. So actually our memories are remarkably unreliable. Although we may think that I saw something in my childhood, but actually what we remember is very little. Often we forget many things. So Krishna's remembrance of Krishna is actually revelation. And in that sense, it's very rare. So now, after describing how rare knowledge about Krishna is, now Krishna will start describing what that knowledge of His glory is, knowledge about the Absolute. So, from 4 to 7 is how Krishna is the source of material and spiritual worlds. Let's look at the fourth verse. Umirapo nalo vayu khammano buddhirevacha ahankara iti yamme vinna prakriti nashtadha. So, bhumir apo nalo vayu. So here Krishna is describing the seven elements. Bhumi is earth, apo is water, anala is fire, vayu is air. Kham mano buddhirevacha, ether, mind, intelligence and ego. These are ashtada. Ashtada is eight. Vinna prakritir, which are my separated energies. So, what does it mean, separated energies? Now, Prabhupada would give a simple example for separated energies. It's like he would say that, you know, milk comes from a cow. So, the milk is the energy of the cow, but it is not that wherever the milk is present, the cow has to be present. So, the milk is separate from the cow. Or Prabhupada would say that, I speak, and then my speech is put in a recording. And then the recording is available for people to hear. So then the recording, is it same as Krishna or different from Krishna? It is actually, same of Prabhupada, different from Prabhupada. It's Prabhupada's voice. So in that sense, it is the energy of Prabhupada. But Prabhupada may not be present at a particular place and the recording may be present. So in that sense, it is separated energy. And then, you would also give an example for how separated energy can have a different nature. Now this is one of the perplexities in the Vedanta, and it is generally there in all religions. Anybody who has thought about God, they feel this question that God is good, whereas this world is filled with evil. So, why has this world filled with evil come from God? How and why has it come from? So, once Prabhupada has asked this question, you know, if God is good, why is there so much evil in this world? So, Prabhupada sometimes gave answers which just jolted people out of their complacency. Prabhupada said, so this question, person who was asking this question was a young lady. So Prabhupada told her, you are beautiful, but why is your stool ugly? She just had no answer to that. So Prabhupada said, because it is your separated energy. It is your separated energy. So the idea is that which is separated may come from a source, but it may not have the qualities of the source. So here, Bhinna me prakriti rashtadha. So Bhinna, now Prabhupada gives a special insight. None of the previous acharyas talk about Bhinna in that sense. So the eight separated divisions, the adjective Bhinna can be applied to prakriti or it can be applied to ashtadha. So this can be the separated energy or the eight separate categories of the prakriti, ashtadha, whichever. So Prabhupada applies it as eight. The separated energies. These are the separated energy of Krishna. These eight are the separated energies of Krishna. And now Prabhupada goes into quite a philosophical section over here. He says, how are these the separated energies? He quotes from a scripture called Pasatuta Tantra. That's one of the Tantra, Pancharatra scripture, Tantra. That's why the word Tantra comes over here. And then he describes how Vishnu Stutrini Rupani Purushakhyane Ato Vidu Ekam Tumata Srashtur Vithiyam tuanda samsthitam, tritiyam sarvabhutastham, tani gyatva vimuchyate. So Vishnustu tri rupani. There are three forms of Lord Vishnu, it said. पुरुषाख्यान्यथो विदुः नो दैट देयर आर तिस्त्री व्हाट आर तिस्त्री एकं तु महतः श्रेष्ठुर् वन इज द महत्तत्व द्वितीयं तु अण्ड संस्थितं द सेकंड इज दैट विच इज सिचुएटेड इन द अण्ड दैट इज द ब्रह्मांड सो फर्स्ट रेफर्स टू महाविष्णु सो इफ इट इज फ्रॉम हिज बॉडी पोर्स actually the substratum of all material existence the mahatattva comes out dvitiyam tu anda samsthitam second refers to the garbhodaksha vishnu who enters into the brahmanda and from his navel the lotus is born on the brahma jyoti tritiyam sarvabhutastham so that refers to sarvabhutastham refers to the kshirodaksha vishnu who is present in all living beings of the super soul tani gyatva vimuchyate one who knows all these that person becomes That person attains liberation. Tani yatva vimuchyate. So now Prabhupada explains how actually the material world is a temporary manifestation of one of the energies of the Lord. So the Lord's glory is so great that he has many energies and among them one of his energies is material energy and that material energy has a temporary manifestation. That is the material world. Then he also explains that how limited the jurisdiction of material science is. So material science comprises these 10 items and nothing more. What are these 10 items? Prabhupada says that earth, water, fire, air, ether, and within which these are called the 5 gigantic creations or the gross creations. Within which the 5 sense objects are included. With the manifestations of physical sound, touch, form, taste and smell. So these are the jurisdiction of material science. How is that? Bhumirapo nalo vayu. So this Prabhupada uses the word gigantic creation that will be used in 13.6. Mahabhutani. Mahabhutani. Mahabhut refers to earth, water, fire, and ether. So Prabhupada translates that as gigantic creations or gross creations. Now, modern science doesn't talk much about the mind, intelligence, or ego, and doesn't talk about the soul also. It doesn't analyze deeply enough to conceive of these things. So its scope focuses largely on gross matter. And that's why its picture of reality is incomplete. Its picture of reality is incomplete. So to get a complete understanding, we should not look at gross matter, but gross matter plus subtle matter plus soul. When all three are understood, then one's understanding becomes complete. So then Prabhupada quotes about Sankhya. This kind of analysis of the analysis of Sankhya. But he says, all Sankhyas, those who study Sankhya, they try to analyze material nature. And he says, all that they are analyzing actually remains within the scope of the external energy of Lord Vishnu, of Lord Krishna. So Sankhya philosophers, they generally don't analyze this world in 24 elements. But beyond those 24 elements is the higher reality, which they don't reach out to ultimately. So in that sense, their analysis is incomplete. Then, now let's go to the next verse. Now Krishna will talk about the spiritual energy. Apareyamitastvanyam prakritim vidhane param jiva bhutam mahabaho yedam dharyate jagat. So apareyamitas. Apart from this, there is another. So this was, apareyam is, this was inferior energy. This is apara. So apara and para are categories. Apara refers to lower or inferior. Para refers to superior or higher. Apareyamitas. So apart from this inferior, there is anyam. Anyam is another. What is that? Prakritim vidhi me param. That is my para prakriti. That is my superior energy. And then jiva bhutam mahabaho. They are the living entities. And mahabaho refers to, oh Arjuna, your mighty arm. So what are these living entities doing? Yedam dharyate jagat. So they are maintaining the world. How do they maintain the world? So, this is used actually in a slightly sarcastic sense. That the living entities are maintaining the world in the sense that the prisoners are maintaining the prison. And if there were no prison, then there would not be any need to maintain the prison. So, in a sense, here they say, Yayadam Dharyate means it is maintained for them. Because they are there, so it is maintained. Just like because the prisoners are there, so the prison has to be there. Of course, we all know from our entity experiential point of view, it's not we who are maintaining the world. Now, we are not causing the rains to fall, the sun to rise, we can't cause all the call this. So obviously we are not the maintainers. When Krishna is referring over here, it's not referring to we being as the maintainers. So it's in this sense. We are maintaining. So now somebody will say, no, actually this refers to that the living entities are maintaining the world. So are the living entities themselves the absolute truth? So if that were the case, then why would these living entities have to surrender to the absolute truth, have to beg for the mercy of the absolute truth? Now if we are the maintainers of the jail, then we don't have to be trapped in the jail. We don't have to ask anyone, oh please release me from the jail. We are the maintainers of the jail. We can go out of it any time. But we can't do that. And that's why we can't say this in the literal sense that we are the maintainers. We are the that supreme being who is maintaining the world. And Prabhupada quotes a verse from the Bhagavatam, 10.87.30. This is one of the concluding sections of the Bhagavatam. So, this is the verse. Aparimita dhruvas tanubhito yadi sarvagatas tarhi na shashyate ti niyama dhruvanetratha ajani chayanmayam tadabhimuchyanyantra bhavet samam anujanatam yadamatam madushtaya dushtataya. Matadushtataya means that is a faulty and polluted opinion. Matadushtataya. What is that? That aparimati drivas tanubhuto yadi sarvagatas. Sarvagata is all pervading. If aparimata is unlimited or eternal. So sarvagata says, tanubhutam, those who are embodied, if they were all pervading, if they were eternal as you are, my dear Lord, then they would not be under your control. They would not have to beg for mercy from you so that they'll become liberated. The very fact that they have to beg for such mercy means that they are not the infinite living beings. They are finite living beings. And that's how they are subordinate. And then Prabhupada talks about this. So that means basically there are two energies. There is matter and there is spirit. So matter has these eight categories, earth, water, fire, earth. And the spirit is, actually Krishna will say now, here he's talking about a soul. Within the soul there is soul. In spirit there is soul and the Supreme Lord. He will talk about himself in the next verse. Now, Krishna is here talking about how he is the source of everything. So, he will continue this discussion. There are these two are my energies. Etad yoni nyabhutani sarvani tyupadharaya aham krishnasya jagatah prabhava pralayastatha. So, etad yoni nyabhutani, all these living beings, sarvani tyupadharaya, all of them, aham kritsnasya jagatah, I am the source of it all, everything. Prabhava pralayastatha. I am the, prabhava means the origin, and pralaya is the annihilation, the shelter of the annihilation. So everything that exists in this world is a combination of matter and spirit, and ultimately all of it comes from me. Both these living etad yoni bhutani, these are the yoni of everything that we see. So for example, we may see a computer screen. So that computer screen is made of matter, not just ordinary matter, but matter that has been acted upon by a soul. So if you look at everything in this world, whatever we see is a combination of this matter, spirit, or the combination of both, in various ways. So Krishna says, he's giving a reasoning here to show how ultimately everything comes from him. So these two energies come from him, and everything that we see, it comes from these two energies and their combination. Therefore, everything ultimately comes from him. And he says in this way, I am the beginning of everything and I am the end of everything else. Prabhava and Pralaya. Prabhava is the origin and Pralaya is the end. I am the beginning and the end of everything. Why does Krishna talk about the beginning and the end over here? The subject is the glory of Krishna. And the glory of Krishna is that he is all-pervading. He is all-pervading not just in terms of space, not just that he exists everywhere, not just in terms of time, that he exists at all times, that is definitely there. But he is all-pervading also in the sense that nothing exists but him. That he is supreme, his glory is that ultimately he is the only existence. That doesn't mean that we don't exist, but we exist as his energies. So we come from him and we are meant for his service and his pleasure. So in that sense, it's all pervasive. It all exists, but it is all connected with the absolute truth. And in that sense, it's all the manifestation of the absolute truth. So Prabhupada says that spirit is the basic field of creation and matter is created by spirit. Spirit is the basic field of creation means actually spirit is what activates creation, and that makes it clarified that matter is created by spirit. And then the cause of the universe is the big soul, Krishna. And Krishna and Prabhupada, the cause of this big soul is the super soul. And Krishna, the supreme, is the cause of both the big and the small souls. So Prabhupada gives an example over here. A small child may create a toy. A big child, a person, may create a skyscraper. But ultimately, everything that we have is a combination of matter and spirit. So the body that we have is actually present because activated because of the soul. So that supreme soul, he is the activator, he is the maintainer, and he is the end result, end destination of the whole universe. So when you talk about the super soul can be understood in three ways. The super soul is the Kshirodaksha Vishnu is the super soul of the body, of the living entity. The Garbhodaksha Vishnu is the super soul of the universe. And the Mahavishnu is the super soul of the Mahatattva. Mahatattva. And Prabhupada quotes the famous Kathopanishad, Nityo Nityanam Chetanas Chetananam. So, Eko Bahunam Yovidhati Kaman. There is one special living entity who is different from all the other living entities who are also conscious and who are also eternal. And what is the speciality of this entity? This entity is actually Eko Bahunam Yovidhati Kaman. Is the maintainer of everyone. So, in this world, everything comes from Krishna, everything returns to Krishna. There are phases of expansion. Sometimes a person may have a collapsible stick. So, a person is walking along, the person has a collapsible stick. Sometimes some sannyasis also have collapsible danda. So, because nowadays when traveling in planes, they don't allow the normal danda to be taken. So, a collapsible danda. That means it's big. Then when you want to shut it down, tuck, 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 it becomes so small, you can just put it in the pocket and take it also. So like that, the creation unfolds from Krishna. That unfolding of the creation is talked about in third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Several places actually it's talked about. And from one element, other element emerges. Like that, the emergence moves on. But ultimately, everything comes from Krishna. That is the eternal truth. And then Krishna talks about something else over here. Mattaha parataram nanyat kinchidasti dhananjaya mai sarvamidam prutam sutre mani ganaiva. So, mattaha parataram na anyad. So, Krishna is telling, superior to me, parataram. So, there is better than me, greater than me, higher than me, parataram. So, tara is an intermediate superlative. Tara is an intermediate superlative. That means, good, better and best. Yukta, yukta tara and yukta tama. So, tara is intermediate, better, at that level. So, there is no truth paratara than me. Na anyat. Apart from me, there is no truth higher than me. Kinchidasti dhananjaya. There is no possibility. Krishna says, I am the highest truth. And now Krishna is the supreme truth. That will make us think that he is okay. He's the king who exists above everything else and he looks down from above to all of us. No. Mai sarvamidam prottam sutre mani ganaiva. So actually there are two aspects to God's glory. There is his transcendence and there is immanence. Transcendence refers to how he exists in the spiritual world, separated from everyone and everything, and he exists there eternally. And his immanence refers to how he pervades all of it. So, transcendence means God is beyond matter. Immanence means God is within matter. So, the Bhagavad Gita explains that there are both aspects to God. There is his transcendence also, and there is immanence also. So, his transcendence aspect is talked about. There is no truth higher than me. And we'll talk about his transcendence aspect several times in the Bhagavad Gita. For example, Krishna says, Bhutana. Ishwaropisan, Ajopisan Navyatma. That means he talks in 4.6 that I come in an eternal, imperishable body and the Lord of all living beings. Even when I come in the material world, I am not contaminated by that. When Krishna talks about Parastasmat Bhavonya, that beyond this material world, this spiritual world, that is talking about transcendental aspect. And then this chapter will talk about his immanence aspect, how he pervades all of reality also. So, is God transcendent or immanent? Is God separate from matter or is God within matter? Actually, it is both. God is transcendent and immanent. He is present within matter, but he is not contained by matter. He is not limited to matter. He extends beyond matter to the ultimate reality. Kinchidasti dhananjaya. Actually, there is no truth higher than him. Krishna is the highest truth. But that doesn't mean, just because he is highest, doesn't mean he is far away. He is also right within us. He is accessible to us. He pervades all of creation. In fact, how he pervades, how he is immanent, that will be described in the next series of verses from 8 to 11. But here, we will discuss that in our next class. But here, Sutre Manigana Iva, that is an important metaphor that just as when there is a necklace, say when there is a skantimala, what we see primarily is the beads. The nice jewel necklace, what we see will be the beads. But within the beads, going through the beads, is the thread. And what is that thread? That thread, Krishna is saying, I am that thread. So, whatever we see in this world, that is the various phenomena. You see, various attractive things in this world, but underlying them, unifying them, the thread of truth is Krishna. So, this metaphor is to convey how Krishna is underlying, unifying within even the material world, how he is immanent within the world. Now, the Acharyas, especially Baldev Vidya Bhushan in the Vedanta Sutra comment, raises this issue, and also it comes up various other places. And Krishna is telling there is no truth higher than me. Then what is Krishna referring to? The Maya. The Mayavadis have the idea that the form is not the highest truth. Beyond the form, there is the impersonal reality. That is the highest truth. That is their idea. But then Krishna is telling over here that actually, Krishna is Mattaha. He says, me. Apart from me, there is no higher truth. What does it mean? And when Krishna is saying me, he refers to me. We can't go about convoluted, twisted interpretation. When the Prime Minister says, obey me. Oh, that means that there is some other official who is higher than the Prime Minister, who is acting through the Prime Minister, and it is that person we should obey, not the Prime Minister. Nothing like that. Mattaha parataram nanyat. Krishna is telling that there is no truth higher than me. So the Krishna is, if you want to follow the Bhagavad Gita, we can't just impose our philosophy on the Gita. We have to see what the Gita actually is saying. And the Gita is very clearly saying that we have to surrender to Krishna. And Krishna alone. Mattah parataram na anyat. There is no truth higher than Krishna. And let's look at the purport. So Prabhupada says that there is a common controversy over the supreme truth is personal or impersonal. And he says it is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita in every step, and that he is a person. How is it confirmed? Krishna is using mattah over here. And then Prabhupada talks about also the Ishvara Parama, Krishna, Sachidananda Vigraha. So Ishvara Parama, the supreme controller, the supreme truth. So that also confirms the point that the supreme truth is a person, Sachidananda Vigraha. And then Prabhupada quotes from the Shatashatrupanishad 3:10 over here. Tato yad uttarataram yad tadaru arupam anamayam ya etad vidur amritaste bhavanti Atetare dukkham evaipayanti. So, actually, this verse, the significant point of this verse is that, not verse, the quotation, the point is arupam, that actually there is no form. Prabhupada emphasized the point that actually we have to look at the context. And so, the verse itself means that. In the material of Brahma, the primary unity within the universe is understood to be supreme among the demigods, human beings, and lower animals. But beyond Brahma, there is a transcendence who has no material form and is free from all material contaminations. Anyone who can know him also becomes transcendental, but those who do not know him suffer the miseries of the material world. So, Prabhupada says that actually we cannot just. My personal stress the word arupam, but Prabhupada says we have to look at the full context. And this is 3.10. And before that is 3.8 and 9 in the same Shatashatra Upanishad. And what is it saying about that absolute truth? Vedahametam purusham mahantam आदित्यवर्णं तमसा परस्ताद् तमेव विदित्वा तिमृत्युमेति नान्यपन्था विद्यते नाय यस्मात् परं नापरमस्ति किञ्चित् यस्मान्नान्यूनाध्यायोऽस्ति किञ्चित् वृक्षैव स्तब्धो दिवि तिष्ठत्येकस् तेनेदं पूर्णं पुरुषेण सर्वं तेनेदं पूर्णं पुरुषेण सर्वं इट्स अ लॉन्ग द इम्पोर्टेंट लॉन्ग वर्स द पॉइंट इज दैट इट्स पुरुषम सो एक्चुअली इट्स वेरी कैटेगोरिकल द फर्स्ट लाइन स्टार्ट्स विद द वर्ड पुरुषम हियर एंड देन आफ्टर दैट सॉरी द फर्स्ट लाइन स्टार्ट्स विद द वर्ड पुरुषम वेदाहमेतं पुरुषं महंतम आई नो दैट एब्सोल्यूट ट्रुथ And then again, tenenam purnam purusheena sarvam. So just in the prior verse, two prior quotations, 8 and 9, what is said, the word purusha is used. So when the word purusha is used, how can we say that what is being referred to is something non-personal, something formless? Purusha refers clearly to a person. So what is this quotation actually saying? Vedahametam purusham mahantam. I know that great absolute truth. What is the characteristic? Adityavaranam tamasah parastar. His complexion is such that he can take us beyond the darkness of material existence. So, tamasah parastar. Prabhupada translates that beyond the conceptions of darkness. Tamasah parastar. Tameva viditva timrityumeti. By knowing him, one can attain liberation. One can go beyond the cycle of birth and death. Nanya pantha vidyate ayanaya. And there is no other path apart from this to attain liberation. And then further describing the position of that absolute truth. Yasmat param na paramasti kinchit. That apart from him there is no greater truth. Yasmat nanyo na jyayosti kinchit. Actually this absolute truth is so paradoxical. That on one side there is nothing greater than him. And on the other side there is nothing smaller than him also. How can there be nothing smaller than this him? Because this is a Mahavishnu is greater than the greatest. And as Shirodakshaya Vishnu present in the super soul. Present even within the atoms and present within the heart of even microscopic living beings. So therefore, actually, is smaller than the smallest also. Nasman param nanyo na jayoste kinchit. So the point is, the Lord has inconceivable attributes. Greater than the greatest, smaller than the smallest. Vriksha ivastabdho ivitishtatyekas. So the example is interestingly given over here that this is a tree situated in one place, but from that one place, the tree radiates its energy everywhere. Similarly, Tenedam Purnam Purushena Sarvam. This absolute truth pervades his energies everywhere. So Prabhupada is quoting this point to talk about how the Upanishads also confirm that the absolute truth is a person. The absolute truth is not impersonal. The absolute truth is a person. So Vedahametam Purusham Mahantam. And that Purusha is Krishna. So in this way, the seventh chapter, the first part establishes how Krishna is the source of all energies, material and spiritual. And how ultimately everything is sustained by Krishna. There is no truth higher than him. And he pervades everything just as a necklace is pervaded by a thread. So his pervasion is not just passive, his pervasion is unifying, it's active. So the immanence, how Krishna pervades the material matter, will be discussed from 8 to 11, which we will discuss in our next class. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai. Hare Krishna.